One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I never believed in the stories whispered around the campfires, tales of elusive creatures stalking the deep woods. As a park ranger responsible for maintaining a popular hiking trail, I prided myself on my rationality and skepticism. However, the reports began to flood and hikers claiming to have encountered a towering, Bigfoot-like figure along the path I knew so well. I laughed it off at first, dismissing the accounts as overactive imaginations fueled by the eerie silence of the dense forest. But as the tales persisted, so did the unease that crept into the hearts of those who ventured into the woods. Curiosity and a growing sense of duty led me to investigate. One foggy evening, as the sun dipped below the horizon and shadows stretched like fingers across the trail, I decided to hike the path myself. Armed with a flashlight and my skepticism, I treaded carefully along the well-worn trail, casting wary glances into the trees. The air seemed to thicken with an unspoken presence, and every rustle of leaves made my heart skip a beat. I shook off the eerie feeling, convincing myself it was merely the product of an overactive imagination. That's when I heard a low, guttural growl that resonated through the trees. My flashlight trembled in my grasp as I turned to face the source of the sound. There, in the shadows, emerged a massive figure. It stood at least 8 feet tall, covered in coarse, matted fur that seemed to absorb the moonlight. Its eyes gleamed with an otherworldly intelligence, and a foul odor hung in the air. The Bigfoot-like creature moved with an unsettling grace, its movements silent yet purposeful. Panic seized me, and instinct took over. I fumbled for the tranquilizer gun slung across my chest, convinced that capturing this creature would put an end to the unsettling reports. With a shaky hand, I aimed at the creature, my fingers trembling on the trigger. But before I could squeeze it, the creature vanished into the shadows, leaving only the echoes of its growls behind. I stood frozen, my breath shallow, grappling with the reality of what I had just witnessed. As I stumbled back along the trail, the forest seemed to close in around me, its once familiar embrace now tainted by the unknown. The reports of encounters weren't mere campfire tales. They were chilling truths etched into the heart of the woods. The legend of the Bigfoot-like figure that haunted the trail became more than just folklore. It was a living nightmare, and I, the skeptical park ranger, was now a reluctant believer, forever haunted by the memory of a creature that defied explanation, slipping away into the darkness, leaving me to grapple with the terrifying unknown that lurked within the depths of the forest. The story takes place in Western Massachusetts. 5 years ago, I was driving to work bright and early in the morning, and the SUV next to me was in a right-turn-only lane. I was in the straight lane while we were waiting for the light to change. I didn't think much of it or look at the SUV or driver until the light changed, and they also tried going straight. At that point, I looked over as they were basically trying to run me off the road to go straight and veering into me. I was going to honk, but then the middle-aged lady who was driving jerked head to the side, looked right at me, and her whole face morphed into a terrifying face. I don't even know how to describe it. It elongated and looked awful and terrifying, like that Scream painting by Edward Munch. But way more terrifying. It's like she decided to show me what she really is, and it changed in a flash. I slammed on my brakes. She, or it, cut in front of me, and I ended up taking the very next right turn just to get away from her, and parked on the side of the road to catch my breath. I don't do drugs, I sometimes have a couple of beers after work, but nothing crazy. I've never seen anything like this before or after, and I've been too scared to mention it to anyone but my husband for the fear of being called a crazy person. I saw her face change right before my eyes, and to this day, absolutely certain of what I saw. The feeling that came over me was just absolute terror, and the look she gave me was certainly menacing. Has anyone else ever experienced anything like that? Instead of a grin, it was an open-mouth expression with a threatening, pissed-off look. But the mouth and entire eye area were black. And the same, an elongated pointy face that no human could just naturally morph their face to make. Really, really freaky. The color of the face changed. More like a loss of color. Everything around the eyes got really dark and had a big, open, dark, scary mouth. I shake just thinking about that day. I've had way too many experiences that were odd. I just didn't want to include them with the story and sound like a total loon. I had a very, very traumatic childhood. I survived a war, had really terrible things happen to me, and saw horrible things happen to others, including seeing children get killed. I was 10 when I came to the U.S. as a refugee and spoke no English. I think that trauma made me more sensitive to the spirit world. I get feelings, good and bad, that something is going to happen, and it does. My husband and my boss call me psychic. People are also always shocked by how well I can just read their minds. I don't try to. I just know what they're trying to say before they even finish saying it. I've also experienced ghosts many times, including one in our last house that my kids and husband are 100% sure of too. He didn't give menacing feelings though, and never physically manifested himself. We and even our friends experienced watching the doorknob turn on the front and back door and the doors swing open. He also has a weird thing for oil. Twice, a bottle of oil slowly moved from the back of the counter towards the front until it fell over onto the ground. Both times I had a witness with me who also saw it. I called him because I work as a real estate paralegal and reviewed the history of the house and found a man named Dana died there young of lung cancer. However, my son, when he was young, swears that a little girl said hello to him in the bathroom there. Things slowed down there, and in my new house, there is no activity at all now. When I went to visit my home country, I also went to Turkey and bought these amulets called Nazar. Once I put them in the house, the ghost activity became pretty much non-existent. I'm afraid to experiment with this spiritual sensitivity. I don't want to be bothered by spirits all the time. I went to Salem and refused to do any seances or anything that could attach a spirit to me. Years ago, I dated a guy who had a heavy drug and alcohol addiction. It was really sad. He would be the sweetest person ever during the day, and then get absolutely hammered and turn into a totally different person. Mean, angry, verbally abusive. The next day, he didn't remember any of it. One night, I was drunk with him, and we were having a great time. We went to bed, and it was like a switch was flipped, and he was angry and upset and calling me names. He started saying really weird crap, like that the Chinese mafia was after him. He was terrified and deadly serious. I'll never forget how at one point I looked at him, and he didn't look like him anymore. It was like his face changed to this creepy jester-looking face, but not human. I was like, WTF? Why is your face different? He responded, Eric isn't here right now. This reminds me of a line you would hear in an Exorcist movie. We went to bed, and of course the next day he was back to normal and had no idea what he did and said all night because he was blacked out. To this day, I think he was possessed and it took over when he was drinking. He also said that one time he was a kid and he went into the woods and tried inviting a demon to possess him and nothing happened. Makes me wonder. I had an experience in an old house I was renting. I basically got a good deal. If I rented it, I would promise to work on it and fix some of the problems. This was a city auctioned hole that had been abandoned for several years and become a local dope house for the homeless. When I looked at it originally, it was infested with fleas. I was wearing a pair of shorts. Upon entering the backyard, a city public works letter of condemning notice for flea infestation. The landlord was caught off guard as he bought it sight unseen. The city came and fumigated the yard 4 times wearing suits with oxygen to get rid of the issue. Back to the real story of too many out of that house in just 1 year. Now a bit on me beforehand, I've been told by a few friends of the secondary nature that I hold a certain light or direction for the spiritual realm. Sort of a beacon either for drawing them near or to warn them. I had to come to grips with that idea in this house, as I write my entire body tingling as every hair on me is standing straight up. Anyway, back to the story. I had a couple of friends and roommates over. It was a late night for the fun the night before. Mind you, I had just months prior to this particular incident lost my wife of 7 years to lupus. Her pain was real. That is a whole different story for another day. I had been lounging all day, in and out of the kitchen. It was now about 6 p.m. in the evening, late summer, I'd say August, I believe, ill. I was lying on the floor watching TV, and suddenly I felt a weight in chest and my arms, which were already on my chest, not really crossed, but close. The weight pressed on harder for what felt like an eternity. Some say it was anxiety, but mine is different. I feel like I swallowed a softball, and it is stuck. This was hard, dead weight, literally sucking the air right out of me. Then suddenly I sit straight, something yanked me up in, trying to call to my roommate like a night terror. She finally sees me, immediately comes to me, and my arms won't release. She even tries to slap me, to no avail. Then I'm flip-flopped over in the prone position. And like you said in the movie, The Ring, this dark hair, extremely wire-thin and mangled face, ripping apart at every fold, crawling under me, pulling itself straight to my face, and leans in so fiercely. She lets out this terrifying blood-boiling scream and odor like a sewer coming from all over her. Finally, another roommate just getting home heard the scream from outside while getting out of her boyfriend's truck and came running in to help. I hadn't spoken this story to anyone for fear of it returning. To this day, we'll never forget that face. Afterward, I immediately called my friend who was gifted, who was one of the people who told me of my gift. I went to explain it as she already knew and let me know that someone at some time or another had ritualistic Ouija behavior or celebrations. Those so-called toys are not to be used by anyone who isn't experienced. They can bring things unwanted. One night while driving to work on Interstate 75 near Ocala, Florida about 2 years ago, I watched a bright light come down from the sky, almost like a helicopter, and shined a light right into the cab of my truck. I was very scared. At the same time, a car came speeding past me erratically. It was late, so I couldn't see the car. Instantly, I called a friend to tell her what happened as I was really scared. She told me to pull over, and so I did, into a gas station. It was about 10 p.m. I parked and tried to regain myself. Then I saw this man pull up right in front of me. He looked like he stepped right out of the 1950s, black everything. Black car wheels, windows, etc. Everything he had on was black. He also wore black sunglasses. I saw him and felt really odd. His presence took my breath away as he looked right at me. I felt very intimidated, and it was almost like no one else saw him. He went into the store, and I never got out of my truck. I was too scared. On his way back to his vintage all-black car, he never stopped glaring at me. I could feel it through his glasses. He got in his car, and I waited for him to leave, as I didn't want to chance him following me. He disappeared behind the gas station and never came out from the other side. I waited about 30 minutes, nothing, so I left. When I finally got to work, I sat in my truck terrified. It wasn't over. What I'm going to say next is very odd, but I'm telling you all what I saw. It was about 11:30 p.m. by then, and I noticed clouds about 200 feet away floating over and landing on the tops of trees parked right in front of me. A literal stone's throw in front of me. I sat and watched, confused, to say the least. I didn't notice anyone coming or going while I watched. By the time I got out of my truck, over 5 hours had passed. I had missed work, but was in the parking lot. I'll never know, but my face and shirt were soaking wet as if I was in tears the entire time. I felt a lot of things that night, but sadness was not one. I haven't really told anyone this and feared it happened again, or I would be ridiculed. In the picturesque countryside west of Eugene, nestled near the quaint town of Veneta, my wife and I experienced an extraordinary encounter on a warm summer day in 1985. Riding our trusty Vespa scooter, we reveled in the wind whistling past us as we coasted downhill, our laughter carried away by the breeze. As we descended, the vibrant green of the Oregon landscape enveloped us in a sense of serenity. The sun filtered through the leaves, casting dappled shadows on the road ahead. Our carefree spirits matched the carefree speed of our scooter. With the wind tousling our hair, it felt as if we were in our own little world, blissfully unaware of what lay just beyond the curve. With each twist and turn, we ventured closer to an unexpected spectacle that awaited us. As we rounded a bend, our eyes widened in disbelief. There, in a shallow ditch, lay a creature that defied all explanation, a massive Bigfoot, sound asleep. The creature's sandy brown fur was tinged with hints of reddish hues, its immense form cocooned in repose. The scooter's purr transformed into a soft hum as we glided closer, our fascination and trepidation mingling in our gazes. The creature, normally so elusive and rumored, lay there in all its glory, its chest rising and falling with each breath. Its features were remarkably detailed, from the dark pools of its closed eyes to the impressive muscles that defined its arms and legs. And then, as if sensing our presence, or perhaps the vibration of our approach, the Bigfoot stirred. Slowly, its eyes opened, and we found ourselves locked in a gaze that transcended the boundaries of our worldviews. The creature's gaze held a mixture of curiosity, surprise, and perhaps a touch of amusement. It was a moment suspended in time, the boundary between reality and fantasy blurring into an indistinguishable realm. As our Vespa coasted past the dozing giant, my wife and I continued to look back, our expressions a fusion of awe and disbelief. The creature watched us, its gaze lingering on our retreating figures, as if acknowledging our shared connection in that fleeting instant. The rest of the ride back to our home was a whirlwind of emotions and hushed conversations. We grappled with the enormity of what we had just witnessed, struggling to reconcile our encounter with the conventional reality we knew. Who would believe our story? Could we even believe it ourselves? In the years that followed, my wife and I found ourselves revisiting that day in our minds over and over again. We became avid researchers, delving into the mysteries of Bigfoot sightings and accounts. The memory of that summer day fueled our curiosity and guided us on a path of exploration we never could have predicted. We shared our tale with a select few, who listened with varying degrees of skepticism. Some dismissed it as a fanciful fabrication born from the excitement of a downhill ride, while others entertained the possibility that we had indeed crossed paths with a creature that defied explanation. Now older but still filled with the same sense of wonder, my wife and I continue to revisit the spot where we had encountered the slumbering giant. We never saw the creature again, but the memory of its gaze remains imprinted on our souls, a reminder that the world is far more mysterious and magical than we had ever imagined. Our Vespa rides have taken on a new significance, each journey a testament to the inexplicable moments that can alter the course of one's life. And as we ride together through the hills west of Eugene, near Veneta, we know that even in the most ordinary of landscapes, extraordinary wonders can be found, if only one dares to believe in the possibility. My grandmother lives by herself in a little double wide. Out back, there is a big backyard, a huge field that a neighbor farms, and woods beyond that. I have always gotten the sensation something was out in those fields, older than the land, almost a part of the land. Last night, she fell dislocated her shoulder. My parents took her to the ER, and I volunteered to keep watch overnight with her. As soon as I stepped foot in that house, I felt a pressure and an unclean feeling come over me. All through the night, my skin was crawling, and I just felt unclean and like something was in the house with us. This morning, I came back home. My mom me something that has me coming here for answers. She said when she was helping my grandma out of the car that night, she saw something walk through the backyard. She said the best word she could use to describe it was werewolf. She said it was tall, gangly, and on all fours with a shine. She has also felt the unclean feeling. I know a little bit about skinwalkers, and what she described sounded a lot like one. I also study the paranormal, so I'm also of a negative spirit as the culprit. If it is a skinwalker, would Catholic prayers and blessings work, or do I need something else? This is a true story. It happened to me just over a decade and a half ago. I don't know if this is the wrong sub for this sort of thing. If so, please let me know and I'll gladly move it. The title is borrowed from one of the stories my uncle used to tell me when I stayed with him and my cousin when I was young. The title has nothing really to do with the story per se, other than it happened to be the one he was telling when this story happened. I have went back and forth a couple of times on whether or not to post this, partially because I know most won't believe it, and partially because I don't really want to relive it in my head. throw away because no amount of karma is worth getting labeled a whack job should someone I know in real life find this or something. My uncle, we will call him Bob, and his daughter, my cousin, we will call her Sue, used to live a good distance out in the woods. I'm not going to say what state, but suffice it to say it's a very rural area of a southeastern U.S. state. The closest main road was a couple of miles away, and it was one gravel road onto another to get to their house. The only house within walking distance, a long walk at that, about in 1/8 of a mile, was a second uncle of mine, John. And the two of them had lived in that house in the middle of those woods all of their lives up until Bob decided to buy a mobile home and set it up a little farther still into the woods. Yeah, it probably sounds nutso to want to live out in the middle of no frickin' where. The town's TV cable service didn't even offer service to his house. And you could barely get a cell signal there half the time. But my uncle loved it. He was an outdoorsy type, and honestly a bit of a gun nut. He fancied himself a cowboy, I guess. Always wearing a cowboy hat and watching old gunslinger TV shows on VHS, like I said. No cable. My cousin Sue never knew anything different, so she liked living out in the woods just fine too, up until they moved into the trailer. But more on that later. So, being a young boy, I thought my Uncle Bob was just the coolest guy in the world. I always enjoyed shooting and plinking as a kid. My parents bought me a .22 caliber, taught me how to use it and how to safely handle firearms really young. So of course I loved visiting Uncle Bob out in the woods and going hunting with him and checking out his cool guns. That is, until both of my parents got switched to second shift at their jobs, and I had to start going to Bob's house after school every day. At first it wasn't so bad, the lack of cable really bummed me out, but we had VHSs. But what really started to get to me was the walk back to my parents' car at 11:30 when they got off and came.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
...to pick me up. The gravel road that led from my Uncle John's house to Bob's was barely passable as a road, and lit by a single street light. My parents, convinced that a 12-year-old boy had nothing to worry about walking down a gravel road at midnight in the middle of nowhere, I mean, who was going to bother me, right? Would usually park at John's house and call down for Bob to send me walking up the road. It honestly wasn't that big of a deal. Bob would stand at his door and watch me walk up the road to make sure I was all right, and I'd no sooner be out of his sight than the high beams of my parents' car would be greeting me back to safety. But it sure felt like I was walking through hell. Other than the TV situation and the long dark walk, Bob, Sue, and I would sit around and talk about hunting or watch videotaped hunting shows. Bob loved hunting, like hunted every single day. Both of my uncles had been hunting in those woods since they were little, and knew damn near everything about the area. Bob had some pretty spooky stories he would tell from his hunting experiences. Mostly just weird sounds in the woods, occasionally seeing some weird things once or twice. It always tripped me out when he would tell Sue and me those stories about the woods around the trailer we were sitting in at that very moment. Of course, John would never back Bob up on any of those stories. If you asked him about any of them, or if he had ever seen anything, he'd just say something kind of dodgy about how you can't explain everything, and just because he didn't know what something was didn't mean it was anything weird. I don't remember a single time John confirmed anything Bob told me, at least not with any kind of conviction. But that is probably partially because Bob was a natural-born storyteller. He could make scary stories up off the top of his head that would give Stephen King nightmares. That was something else we did to pass the time, sit around and listen to these horror stories that my uncle would come up with. Now don't get me wrong, he never mixed up his real life. This happened to me eerie type stories with his obviously made up supernatural type stories. But knowing how John kinda shrugged Bob's true stories off, and knowing how good of a storyteller Bob was, I always took his tales with a shaker of salt. So anyway, like I said, I really liked hanging out with Uncle Bob and Cousin Sue, and going hunting with Bob, and everything was pretty normal at their trailer for a good while after they moved in. They even got an indoor dog that I loved to death and loved to play with named Muffin. I had maybe been staying with them after school for probably a month when it all went to shit. When it first started, I really kind of wondered if they were playing a joke on me, or setting up some tall tale for a story. It never seemed to happen when I was there. Only on the weekends, or after midnight when I had gone home. Someone was trying to screw with Sue's head. Bob would be gone during the day hunting or gone to town, and someone would F with their trailer. Knocking on doors, knocking on walls, throwing sticks, rocks at it. Now Sue was no Southern Belle. She knew her way around a 12-gauge pump-action shotgun better than most people. But one can only sit in a trailer, the middle of the woods alone, and listen to windows in other rooms getting knocked on before you start to wonder who the hell is coming all the way out in rural bum Egypt to mess with you. Not to mention the stuff happening at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Sue and Bob had bedrooms at opposite ends of the trailer, and at either end, looking outside their window, was a clearing maybe 40-50 feet wide, and then the tree line. At night in the early hours of the morning, Sue could hear someone walking rather heavily around the wood line, and occasionally screaming a high-pitched scream. My dad and Uncle John suggested it was a panther, and not to worry about it, but Sue took to sleeping with the 12-gauge next to her bed anyway. Like I said, I honestly didn't believe it at first. I could barely muster the courage to walk from one end of the gravel road to the other at night with a fully grown man with a gun watching over me. Who the F would have the balls to be wandering around the woods at 3 a.m. screwing with an obviously armed woman? And the fact that it only happened when I wasn't there seemed a little too convenient. I would have thought maybe they were setting me up for some kind of grand story. Or even that Sue, she was a bit of a drama queen. Was just making it up for attention, except that they were kinda keeping it hush-hush, at least for me. The little bits of info I got were mostly hearing other room conversations between Sue and Bob, or Bob and John. I had to piece together what was going on, and question Sue about it later. At first, she just kinda said it was nothing for me to worry about and everything was fine. That is, until one day after school, I got to their house and Bob and Sue were waiting for me at John's house to walk me down to theirs. This was unusual. It was a perfectly bright sunny day. No murderers, rapists, or home intruders in sight. But there was something really strange in the air that day. Some weird glances between Bob and Sue. Something had them on edge. If the awkward looks and edgy acting hadn't tipped me off, the firepower should have. Bob had a six-shooter strapped to his leg and a 30-30 lever-action rifle in his hand, and Sue had the shotgun at her side. It wasn't until Bob was making us dinner in the kitchen later that I found out why. Someone had tried to break in on Sue that day. Bob had gotten up that morning and went squirrel hunting, and someone had tried to rip the door off of their trailer. Bob hadn't went out for a few days given the strange occurrences of the past few days, but everything had seemingly died down. So, this day he had decided he'd go out for just a little while, stick close to the trailer, and see how things went. No more than 45 minutes after he had left, Sue had been sitting on the couch and heard the handle of the door, which she had triple locked, start to rustle back and forth. Gently at first, and then harder, and finally a full-fledged attempt to pull the door off the hinges. Sue had somehow composed herself long enough to call Bob's cell phone and scream for help before grabbing the shotgun and falling into a crying mess on the floor, waiting on God knows what to come through the door after her. It had been watching and waiting on Bob to leave. It gave up a few minutes before Bob got back, either deterred by the door lock, Sue's dog Muffin attacking the inside of the door trying to get out to it, or at the sound of a shotgun's pump action racking around into the chamber. I hadn't noticed walking in. I seemed to remember one of them opening the door for me, but later that day I checked and the doorknob was decimated. I'm not sure how it was hanging on, much less working, and I could tell this wasn't usual Sue drama when she told me. She was nearly in tears. Muffin would not leave her side that entire night, no matter how much I tried to play with her. She had the look in her eye of someone who had been through an emotional hell that day. After dinner, just after sundown, we tried to regain some sense of normalcy. We played a few games of Sorry, a few games of cards, and were sitting down about to listen to Bob continue one of his stories, The Great Smoky Mountain Massacre, from which this story borrows its title. Sue and I sat on the couch with Muffin laying in between us. Bob sat in a chair perpendicular to us. I was honestly not in the mood to hear a scary story from Bob, the master of terror himself, after hearing what had went down that day, but Sue wanted to, so I was okay with it. I suppose maybe looking back, she wanted to put her fear back into something that couldn't really hurt her. Who knows what was outside the door, but at least in there right then, no story was breaking down her door to get at her. 5 minutes in, Bob had us enthralled as usual, and I was just leaning my head back to take a sip of soda when bam, something hit the metal trailer wall directly behind my head so hard I fell out of my seat. Literally, I jumped into the floor, hit the deck, and took cover, Sue in the floor beside me, Muffin barking at the top of her lungs, Bob grabbing a rifle and a spotlight, slamming the back door open and flying out of it trying to kick Muffin back to keep her inside. I could hear very heavy footsteps hitting the ground to the tree line just behind their house. 5 minutes passed, then 10, then an eternity. I remember it like it were yesterday. Finally, what seemed like hours later, but was probably 15 minutes at most, I heard Bob yell to Sue that he was coming back in, which was a good thing as Sue by now had a firearm in hand. He walked back in with disbelief in his eyes. He hadn't made it around the house in time to see what had hit the wall, but the area where the bang was heard, the area just behind my head, was about 10 feet off the ground. There was a dent in the metal the size of an abnormally large man's fist, no more than a foot behind where my head had just been only minutes ago, and my Uncle Bob, who until that point in my life had been the great white hunter to me, had no explanation. Bob and Sue walked me to my parents' car that night. Of course, my parents, being rational human beings, and knowing Bob's storytelling and Sue's flair for the dramatic, didn't believe it was anything other than perhaps a peeping Tom or some backwards neighbor who had no fear of death via acute lead poisoning, and nothing to do but walk several miles in the middle of the night to bang on a trailer and run trying to scare us. It didn't matter if they believed me, though. Just as quickly as the terrorizing had started, it stopped. A month or so passed, and there were no more incidents to speak of, or at least nothing that couldn't be blamed on overactive imaginations or jumpy nerves. No more window taps, no more Muffin barking fits, no more replaced doorknobs. Still, the occurrence made Bob decide that maybe they should cut back a few trees and extend the woodline away from their house a bit, if for nothing else than to extend the sight lines just in case. So they hired a couple of guys to come in during the days with chainsaws and cut some of the trees around the edges of the clearing down. They were friends of the family, so they worked slow. But it gave Bob some time to get some hunting in, trusting that no sane or even insane individual would try breaking in on Sue midday while guys with chainsaws running full blast were walking around. And he was right. No weird activity at all to speak of. Until one Sunday night, a few weekends later. I wasn't there for this part, but it is what I am able to recall piecing together the next day from my 12-year-old brain, now over a decade and a half later. Muffin, being an indoor dog, and needing to go outside as indoor dogs often do, was sitting next to the front door with her leash, sometime just after dark. Bob, not having me to send out to walk her, and still a bit anxious from the strange happenings the month before, grabbed his rifle and flashlight, put Muffin's leash on her, and plunged out into the warm, dark night. Sue was inside washing dishes from dinner and looking out into the yard, newly cleared area, and was just able to faintly see Bob and Muffin from the little bit of glow the gravel road's streetlight provided. Almost no sooner than her paws had hit the dirt, Muffin flipped her shit. She was a small dog, maybe 20 pounds, but she was hitting above her weight barking and pulling Bob toward the tree line with everything she had. Bob was no small man by any means, but trying to balance a flashlight in one hand with a dog leash tied around it, and a rifle in the other. I guess it is fair to say that Muffin was winning the fight. After getting Muffin to stop yanking his arm out of socket, Bob tried to shine his flashlight at the tree line to see what Muffin was barking at, but the beam wouldn't quite reach. All he could see at the distance was what looked like a very thick tree stump the yard clearing had left. And then the tree stump stood up. Sue, inside at the kitchen window and being a lot closer than Bob to the end of the house, yard the former tree stump was now standing at, said the figure was tall and very bulky. Tall meaning over 8 foot in height, and bulky as in. As wide around as a large tree stump. The massive figure took a step toward Bob just as the first before the first shot rang out, and then the second and the third, and so on. The hulking shade, possibly startled by the noise of a 30-30 Winchester, or possibly hit with a round or several, turned and retreated back into the woods. At first, Bob and the fearless Muffin started toward the woods to give chase and find out just what the hell that tree stump had morphed into. However, after a few steps, and realizing he had no idea how many rounds he had left in his rifle, Bob thought better of chasing an obviously physically superior, possibly wounded, animal into the deep, dark woods in the pitch black of night, regardless of how much courage Muffin possessed. Instead, after a quick reload, the night was spent at Uncle John's house. The next day, John and Bob went to look at the scene of the carnage. Brush and small trees were knocked down for yards leading deeper into the woods back over a creek and towards a bluff. But the trail went cold, and there were no obvious signs of blood. So, just what was terrorizing my uncle and my cousin? I have no idea. I do know I talked to John about it a little over a year later, after my uncle and cousin had moved out of that house and into a more populated, less rural part of town. I asked John what he thought it was, and if he thought the story was just Bob embellishing for the sake of a good tale, or Sue playing everything up for attention. John's usual casual disregard for Bob's stories wasn't there this time. He just said he didn't know, and he didn't think he ever would. John actually moved into the trailer after Bob and Sue moved out. Never had any problems as far as I know. Not a peep. You may be wondering what finally made my uncle and my cousin move out between the tree stump night and the time I talked to John about everything. What was it that finally made someone who had lived within an 1 8-mile radius from their childhood home their whole life, and who loved living in the middle of nowhere, finally pack up and move to a less rural area across town? Well, unfortunately for me, that is where I come in. It had been probably 6 or 7 months since my Uncle Bob had shot at some towering behemoth of an unidentifiable human-ish shaped animal. They had speculated just what that shape in the darkness had been for months. Maybe it was a really, really large human. Maybe it was a bear. Black bears are pretty common around here. And one standing on its hind legs for a minute would appear like a stump getting huge, especially in the panic of the moment. Nobody knew. It didn't really matter, though. Either Bob had hit it with enough lead to poison a fishing village, or it had decided it wasn't fond of getting shot at. Either way, it hadn't been back to bother my cousin or my uncle. Bob almost never left the first 2 months, especially without Sue. In the third month, he started cautiously going out, but staying close, and as things tend to do, they started to go back to normal. Finally, after over half a year, Bob was going out almost every day hunting again. Summer had come and gone, and I had decided to spend a Saturday hunting with my uncle. Sue seemed perfectly fine staying alone again. I think she was sick of Bob being there all the time. So Bob and I decided to make a go of it and have at some squirrels. My parents had just gotten me my first shotgun, a single-shot break-action 20-gauge. We walked for maybe a mile and a half, which takes a little while when you are trying to be quit in the woods, and we were just crossing a fence onto a neighboring property. My uncle was friends with the owner and had permission to cross the property as a shortcut when my uncle's cell phone rang, which in and of itself was a miracle given the cell phone coverage of the day and how far we were in the woods. He quickly silenced it and handed my gun over the fence to me I had crossed first. We had to climb over as it was a tall fence. Just as he was about to hand his gun over, the phone began to ring again. Bob pulled the phone out of his jacket and looked at it, answered, and was just about to say, "Sue, I can't talk right now," when I could hear it over his speaker. Loud banging on metal, bang, 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 Muffin barking her head off, Sue screaming for help. Grabbing his gun and slamming his phone into his pocket, Bob took off running back in the direction of their house. Leaving me on the wrong side of the fence, Bob yelled, "He'll be back, stay here." At this point, I believe I was 12 or 13 years old. The exact details kind of blur with time, but the event I can still close my eyes and relive if I am not careful. Bob running as fast as he can through the woods, rifle in hand, his brown jacket getting smaller and smaller into the distance until I'm alone. I'm alone in the woods, not old enough to drive, barely a teenager, not even in high school yet. I'm alone in the woods, no one around for miles, with a single-shot shotgun and a pocket full of shells as my uncle speeds off to defend my cousin from God, only knows what kind of monster my imagination was coming up with. I had never even seen the Silhouette that they had been so afraid of, only heard their descriptions and juxtaposed them to the sound of the banging coming from behind my head that night, 10 feet off the ground. I was alone in the woods, and Muffin, all 20 pounds of her, was trying every bit as hard to get out to tear the monster's throat out to protect my cousin, but I was here almost defenseless. I was alone in the woods, and I was scared to death. Put your 12-year-old self there. Put your 12-year-old self in the woods, alone, with the monsters and the demons, and every creature from under your bed, and stuck imagining what was going on a mile away. Up until that moment, I had never been scared of the woods. But right then, I just wanted to get out. At first, I was able to stay pretty calm and collected. I carefully unloaded the single round in my shotgun after taking a good 5-minute glare around the area to make sure I wouldn't need that single round immediately. Slid the gun under the fence, clumb over the fence myself, and then reloaded. I wanted to get out of there so badly. I knew roughly the way back. But honestly, I wasn't sure I wanted to go back to my uncle's house given its current situation either. I figured it, I followed the trail most of the way to his house, then veered off left to my Uncle John's house. It would be at least moderately safe. At least a lot safer than waiting around here for Bob to scare off whatever was trying to break in on Sue again, just for it to come out here and find me wandering around. At least she had a house, a dog, and an arsenal of Bob's firearms to protect her. Hell, I only had one round at a time. So, weighing the risk of getting in trouble for not staying put like Bob told me to versus the risk of getting eaten by Bigfoot, I started down the trail back to John's house. At best, I run into Bob coming back for me. At worst, I get to John's and call Bob's cell phone and let him know where I am. And at very worst, I run headlong into Sasquatch and have to fight for my life with what would be the equivalent of a BB gun to it. At first, the walk was almost peaceful. Birds chirping, squirrels running about, they always know when you aren't going to shoot them for some reason, and that's when they'll run out in front of you. I say walk because it started out kind of a brisk speed walk sort of thing. As fast as I could without crushing through the brush and announcing my presence to whatever was within earshot. But then, something changed. There were no bird sounds anymore. No little animal noises at all. Just a steady, heavy crunching of foliage underfoot. And it wasn't by me. Something coming toward me that was just out of sight. It couldn't be Bob. It is coming from the direction I'm coming from, but behind me, walking with me toward Bob's house. Okay, F this, I'm out. I remember thinking under my breath as I broke into whatever I could manage for a sprint in the heavier underbrush. A minute into my sprint, I started thinking I was silly. There is no way anything is behind me. After all, isn't this whole thing just Bob and Sue's imagination anyway? Their imagination, now chasing me through the woods, and I still hear it following me. Something is still crunching away just as fast as I am, keeping pace with me in these godforsaken woods. By the time I hit the clearing to John's yard, I don't know if whatever it was still keeping pace with me, or catching up, or gone completely. For all I knew, and in my imagination, the second I hit the clearing, its giant arm was going to grab me and snatch me back into the bleakness of the forest forever. Propelled by that thought and gaining traction in the clearing, I didn't stop running until I was pounding on John's door with everything I had. When he finally got me inside and calmed me down, he explained that whatever had been breaking in on Sue was gone when he and Bob got there. Sue had called John too, and that Bob had just went back into the woods a few minutes ago to find me, meaning there is no way it could have been him following me. John called Bob and let him know I was safe and sound, and a few long months after that day, as soon as they could afford to get out, Sue and Bob moved away from that trailer in the middle of the woods. As far as I know, after that day they never had any more problems. However, on their last day there, Bob told me he joked to Sue he was going to leave a forwarding address on the door so their visitor would know where to find her. Somehow the humor of that one was lost on her.